Even Arkansas is getting a lot of love from people leaving big cities going to it.
Yeah, you know.
Absolutely.
Really?
Not even Arkansas. Mm-hmm. Arkansas is a beautiful state.
Oh,
I've never
yeah,
been.
Course, yeah.
What the
yeah.
hell?
I mean, I haven't either. I just
need, you need to have Shelley on the road.
I know.
No, you really do.
That
well, maybe
fun,
that's year three.
Yeah.
You have to commit, Claude.
No question. Get on. Get out there.
Welcome to Lunch with Shelley, the podcast featuring conversations with colleagues, friends, family, business leaders. At lunch, here's Shelley.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Lunch with Shelley. It is a yucky day here in Washington, D.C., but we have the very sunny and effervescent Margaret Spellings as our special guest today, so we are going to have a great time. Margaret is a nationally recognized leader in public policy and currently serves as president and CEO of the Bipartisan Policy Center. She most recently served as president and CEO of Texas 2036, also a bipartisan think tank. Her remarkable and extensive leadership experience in both state and federal government includes service as a U.S. Secretary of Education, White House Chief Domestic Policy Advisor, Senior Policy Advisor to then-Governor George W. Bush, President of the George W. Bush Presidential Center, and President of the 17-institution University of North Carolina system. My goodness. I know. She was born in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and moved with her family to Houston, Texas, when she was in third grade. She earned a Bachelor of Arts degree in Political Science from the University of Houston and worked in an Education Reform Commission under Texas Governor William P. Clements and as Associate Executive Director for the Texas Association of School Boards. Before her appointment to George W. Bush's presidential administration, Margaret was the political director for his first gubernatorial campaign in 1994 and later became a senior advisor to George W. Bush during his Texas governorship from 1995 to 2000. On an additional and very interesting note, Margaret was the first sitting cabinet member to appear on Celebrity Jeopardy and came in second with a score of $11,100, losing to actor Michael McKean's 38-8. Oh, well. She was the only active member of the Bush administration to appear on Comedy Central's The Daily Show and has also appeared on The Colbert Report. And now she's on the Lunch with Shelley podcast. Thanks so much for being here, Margaret, and let's have lunch.
Okay. Boy, that was an excruciating introduction, and everyone's going to be able to figure out how old I am, but
no,
I've
I don't
been at
so.
This a while.
Oh, my God. None of our listeners do the math.
Okay. Okay, perfect.
Hi. We can order. Here is LaDonna, our waitress. We love to talk about food.
Okay. I would love to have a bowl of the gumbo.
Okay.
And that's all she's having.
That's it?
Yeah, I
think that's it. It's a hearty gumbo, isn't it?
Very hearty. It has rice in it. You're good.
Okay, all right. That's what I'm thinking. I'm going to get myself
I'll do
roll.
The blackened salmon, please, over the spinach salad.
All right. If the nuts are in there, okay for you?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, I always ask.
That's good.
And the grilled shrimp for me.
Yeah, thank you.
I think that's new for you.
It is. Yes.
I love what Claude gets. I always like to.
I'm usually the only one at lunch that gets something that they're not familiar with. And
I
kind
know.
Of try it. Yeah.
We go to such good restaurants, though. Everything is good. So my first question is generally the easiest, but we're definitely going to get to education and young people. Claude and I are sort of like young people these days.
No, you're right. Yeah, and education these days.
Oh, we're so into education.
That too.
Oh, goodness.
I mean, it may be obvious from your intro, but we always learn something new. So how did you come to Washington, and what was your first impression of the city?
Well, it was really kind of funny because, you know, I'd worked for Governor Bush
right.
and worked on the presidential campaign kind of in my spare time and got to know people like Josh Bolton and John Bridgeland and Condi Rice and folks like that. And there I was
bunch
in Texas.
Bunch of dummies.
Bunch of dodos.
Yeah, right.
Well, we'll get to that, too. But anyway, you know, I thought, oh, this is so cool, but I don't know much about Washington. I don't know if I can make it, but maybe I can do education policy because obviously education was a huge thing for Governor Bush. And anyway, I got a call from Andy Card asking me to be the domestic policy advisor. And I thought, oh, my God, I don't know anything about most of this stuff. But then I told myself, I do know a lot about George Bush.
Right.
And I know what he thinks about things. I know how he, you know, what he wants, what his objectives are. And so Karen Hughes and I compared notes because Andy Card had said to both of us, it's a meat grinder. You'll never see your children. It's hard. You know, it's just work, work, work.
Right.
Which there is a good bit of work, work, work being in the White House, as you know. Anyway, we compared notes and said, we don't think we can do it. We don't think we can go. And I think this is in her book. You know, President Bush called us both and told us that he had said to Andy, are you running off the mothers? Because we had had young children.
Oh, no.
So anyway, we didn't get run off. We both came to Washington. And obviously, it was just a privilege and a joy. And as I reflect back on it, just the people that we worked with, the things we got done, Shelley, I mean, anyway, everywhere I go, people say, you know, especially now 20-plus years in the rear view, man, we miss George Bush.
Right.
And he sure did do a lot on education, on energy, on PEPFAR, which is just, I mean, on and on and on. And I think people think, you know, whether you love it or hate it, we were effective.
Well, for sure. Just pause. Tell everybody what PEPFAR is.
PEPFAR is the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief. And it has saved 25 million lives, you know, largely in Africa, but around the world. And it has been a huge, you know, gift of the American taxpayer to humanity and to the world. And it is so super effective. And the Congress finally, and thank goodness, reauthorized it for a one-year extension. But if you're pro-life, you got to be pro-PEPFAR. Hmm.
That's a really good. Is that a, like a
well? I
known
just made
phrase?
That up.
Oh, that's really good.
I mean, cause, you know, because obviously there, are the, you know, there's always controversy around funding programs in Washington.
Right. I know. Anyway. Well, we were just talking with someone who works here about U2 and the Sphere, and Bono was a part of that project, and is so complimentary about President Bush.
Absolutely, and it enjoyed great bipartisan support. You know, from the day it was in, you know, burst in the State of the Union to even today. But
no, it was a lift, though.
It was a lift. Yeah. It was a big ask, but obviously it's made a huge difference. So,
and
I'm
it
proud
sort
of
it wasn't terribly obvious that George W. Bush would be so helpful in that way.
Clearly not.
Yes,
yeah. People were a little bit surprised, to say the least. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I just want to say I love that story about you and Karen Hughes because you have been so terrific about women's organizations and talking to younger women and mentorship and all of that stuff. And you and I, you've been terrific with a group that I work with right now.
Yeah.
You're just great in that sphere. And in a lot of your talks and a lot of other people's talks, they always say, you know, women, it's just so typical for them to say, oh, I don't think I can do that, or I don't know if
that's
I'm qualified
to
do that, or maybe I won't have time, you know what I mean? And it takes someone to be like, hell yeah, I'm just going to give it a shot. Yeah.
Even if
that's
you feel
just such
like
a good
story. You
don't
have time, or you feel like you
may
feel like you don't have what it takes to say, yeah, I'm still going to go for it and do it.
Right, right. You know?
It was like leaning in before leaning in was a thing.
Yeah, and you know, President Bush was so great about elevating women and giving women opportunities. I mean, Laura Bush used to say, I was a domestic policy advisor and Condi Rice was the foreign policy advisor during the early days of the Bush administration. And Laura would say in her speeches, Condi Rice is in charge of all foreign policy and Margaret Smalley is in charge of all domestic policy. And that seems about right to me.
Well,
or something like that, you know. So
yeah, no, that's so cool.
And he just gave us amazing opportunities. But he also, again, back to modeling leadership and good behavior, he also had life in perspective. I mean, he stayed healthy and he worked out and he spent time with his family and engaged with his kids and all the stuff that if you're going to go the distance, you got to do it that
way.
And
his folks.
Yeah.
Well, so tell us, I mean, early on, and you worked with him for such a really long time, but what were the characteristics that drew you to him? Like, what was it initially, or I guess what, you know, over the long haul?
I mean, and, you know, this is something that I think you have an antenna for discerning or you don't, but, he's a good human being.
Yeah.
And this is not limited to Republicans by any stretch. I mean, there are people doing things for the right reasons, and people who are more, you know, agenda driven or self motivated or bottom line or whatever. But he ran for president for the right reasons, and that captivated me. Also, he's funny as hell and fun to be around, and you know that.
Yeah. And but not as well as you do. Like,
well, yeah.
What was it like when you first met him?
First met him when he was thinking about running for governor the first time,
right?
Through my friend Carl Rove, and then Texas Ranger owner George Bush was trying to get smart about Texas public policy, including education. And any state spends, you know, more than half of their budget on public K-12 and higher ed. So
I'm just shaking my head because it's not the best money, especially given the results.
We'll get to that. But the point is, and, you know, if you want to be a governor of any state, you got to know something about education. And it was all during the, you know, constitutional challenges to school funding systems. And I was working at the School Boards Association at the time. And so anyway, he and I met through Carl to kind of get oriented on the issues of the day. And it was fun to just get to know him. So he elected not to run at that point in time when Ann Richards won.
Yes.
And then when he did decide to run, you know, I got recruited and was thrilled to put my
You were the political director.
Yeah.
Wow.
And this was when nobody thought Ann Richards, the beloved and hysterical Ann Richards, could be beat.
Right.
And so anyway, you're the little engine that could. And it was just an effective campaign. And he treated her with dignity and respect and a little bit killed her with kindness. And, you know, we just got it done. But a big part of that was organizing county chairman and traveling the state and going around. I mean, when I think about effective, on a talk fest. I mean, you've unleashed the hounds.
Yeah,
Shelley.
Right.
But, you know, the Mitch Daniels of the world who go around in their RV, or, you know, you got to get out and see the folks, whether you're running for governor or whether you're running for president.
But authentically, not because you have to be there, which is sometimes a problem for even recent candidates. They do it, but they don't seem like they're psyched to do it.
And I feel like you can tell. I feel like
you can tell people who are in touch with people versus
those who just do it because it's part of the quote-unquote gig.
And George W. Bush really feeds on people and energy. I mean, Bill Clinton is like that. I mean, there are people who are just natural connectors with people. And they, you know, I've been around both of them a good bit, and they love it.
Yeah.
Right.
And they want to do it. And when you are out and about, you learn a lot about what people are thinking and what's resonating and whatnot.
And also, I think, you know, I have the privilege of being from a small town in Pennsylvania. Shout out to Wilkes-Barre. But I mention it rather often because it's very grounding. Because also, I think people here, I think that they think that they can pull the wool over other people's eyes if they think that they're somehow less than. I mean, they're snotty, and really it's from an education standpoint if they don't have MBAs or
something,
they're not in equity markets or whatever.
Right, yeah.
So they sort of think, well, we'll tell them we're going to do this. And people outside of the city, they get it.
They totally get it.
And American you have to really,
really
respect
smart.
Them.
Yeah, they are.
And nicer. Well, nice. Very nice.
Yeah. The other thing that's fun, and I've enjoyed, you probably have too, about being in D.C. and having the opportunity to travel around the country in whatever role, the Secretary of Education and whatnot, is just seeing how diverse our country is and how what, you know, people think in Texas is completely different from what they think in PA or wherever.
Right.
And what sets people on fire or what makes them happy. It's just, it's a fun thing to live around the country and work around the country.
I completely agree. And I also really appreciate how beautiful every place is.
Absolutely.
It has its own beauty.
Yeah.
Every I wish place I knew Texas more.
Get down there.
I mean, know.
You're the only one that didn't come into Texas these days.
Right.
And I understand why, too. Mm-hmm. I miss it desperately because I'm a Texan through
and
through, honestly. But
You're wearing a cool jean jacket.
Some of the big cities. I mean, they're leaving, you know, big cities in California, and they're going to, you know, Boise, Idaho.
Well, also
going to
Florida. Texas,
Florida.
Right. Nashville.
Dallas, yeah.
Nashville. Yeah.
Holy smokes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Even Arkansas is getting a lot of love from people leaving big cities going to.
Yeah.
You know,
really? Not
oh, yeah.
even Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
Arkansas is a beautiful state.
Oh,
I've never
yeah,
been.
Course, yeah.
What the
yeah.
hell?
I mean, I haven't either.
You need to have Shelley on the road.
I know.
No, you really do.
Well, maybe that's year three. You have to commit, Claude.
No question. Get on. Get out there.
You're listening to Lunch with Shelley.
You have had so many more privileges with George W. Bush, which I think is really incredible. I mean, it's been a fantastic opportunity.
Yeah.
And I wish I knew him on that level, because he does seem like a very, well, I mean, I know him a little bit, but a really stand-up and funny guy.
He is. He's fun. He's smart. He's, you know, well-intended. He's a good human being. I mean, it was a privilege of my life to work for him for so long. And I've seen him, you know, even still pretty frequently. I saw him in Dallas, you know, a month ago.
At like a Rangers game or something?
No.
That'd be in Houston,
I had dinner with him, you know.
Oh,
so,
that's so nice.
Yeah, we paid him a call.
Right.
You know.
How's
so
he doing?
Great. He is painting up a storm. He really is. And he's a damn
good, good.
And he's a damn
good
artist. He really is.
You know, so, also, it's not a shout out, but I worked for his father, H.W.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm aging myself.
Yeah.
But he was a very patrician esque, but also such a good person.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And people can tell.
Really, really respectable, and his career was incredible.
Absolutely. A life of service.
Yeah. Yeah, so. I mean, the CIA, ambassador to China.
Yeah.
It's just so impressive.
Yeah.
Well, before we get to education, which we'll get to, do you have any, like, fondest or funniest memories of being in the White House? Like, walking in or just, you know, like the Kennedy Center box?
Yes,
or,
I mean, all of that.
Right.
I mean, too many to tell and not terribly fascinating. But what really strikes me about our time there together is how bonded we were with each other and continue to be.
The whole White House crew, the people that we,
this is the mark of a leader, somebody who can build a team, who can create that culture and that comity and that collegiality and all that. And as I've moved back to D.C., just sliding right back into that with friends like Marlene and Suzanne Clark.
Yep.
And, I mean, you know, on and on and on.
Well, because you're a great person.
And but
I mean, really, Margaret is great.
Well, and you almost
and
have to
funny.
Be, right? Like with that team, because you're going through so many different
you
things.
You have to be. I mean, 9/11. Hello.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
oh my God!
Like,
I know.
You know, can make or break you. So
there's so much going on.
Absolutely.
And there are times where you really are all you have. Like your group is.
Yeah.
This is what we have. Even though
exactly.
I mean, it may not be, but it could feel that way from time to time.
Like, no, it's the mark of a good leader, though, and you bring up such an incredible. Point because 9/11 was so scary.
I was
working for Elaine Chao.
Yes, that's right.
And Stephen Law. Shout out Marlene and Gene Carden, Wendy Grubbs, and Sue Hensley and Michelle Korsmo. I mean, Elaine had an incredible team.
She absolutely did.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and I mean, again, kind of back to, this is maybe transitions to education. There are things that you see.
We have a lot of time.
That you see and that you, you know, watch. I mean, 9/11 and how to respond and lead after 9/11, whether you were the president or the domestic policy advisor with a staff of your own, is not something they're going to teach you in a university or a classroom.
Right.
You either know that you got to rise to the occasion, you got to show up, you got to get over your anxiety, your own fear, you got to calm other people down, you got to figure out what's important and not, you know, on and on and on. And so I think you learn that watching other people lead and manage. But here's the other thing, Shelley. We can't not say how much we all came together as a country around that.
Oh yeah.
Remember people? I mean, in PA, you know, flying their flags.
Oh yeah.
And, you know, people showing up and all the members of Congress on the steps of the Capitol and people signing up to be firefighters and police officers and enlist in the military and on and on and on, and just the incredible goodwill as a nation that we had together.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to say, and, well, it's different now. I was just in Pennsylvania, and my sister moved to a place close to Harvey's Lake, which is not terribly interesting, but it's away from downtown
yeah,
and sort of more in the mountains. And so you go around Harvey's Lake, and Harvey's Lake is like 10 miles, And every 100 feet or something, there's a picture of a fallen vet, a military vet. I hadn't seen that in ages. It made me so proud of being from that area. I mean, it was just...
How far is that from the crash site?
Oh, that's a good question. About 2 hours,
okay,
two and a half
a ways,
hours. Yeah.
But still,
no, it had nothing to do with it. It's just like, you know, like it's a national, it's a patriotic place, you know, like... And veterans and military people and firefighters are appreciated rather than...
And back to the American people being smarter than we often give them credit for is they totally get that and they own it and they believe it and it's, you know, in their gut. So God bless America.
I know.
No, absolutely. Yeah.
What is the state of bipartisanship, actually? What do you think? How's it going? And is there a chance of something this year?
Well, this is a tough year, obviously, a presidential election year, and that's always true. But we have, you know, kept the government open. Next year is the year. We're going to have to confront, you know, obviously the first year of a presidential administration, whether it's a first or second term, is the most productive.
Very busy.
Very busy, very productive. And so there'll be a lot of campaign promises made that the candidates are going to want to fulfill. So we also know that the debt ceiling is going to need to get raised again. We also know that the Trump tax cuts are expiring. So a lot of questions are going to be called that will cause us to have to confront some of this stuff. We're also really close to getting a farm bill, which has always been pretty bipartisan. You know, workforce and various things around that have been pretty bipartisan historically. So, you know, I mean, I'm hopeful that maybe we can get some of the permitting reform and some of the things that will, you know, allow the resources that have been, you know, appropriated for infrastructure to get out of the bureaucracy and into reality. But so, yes, I mean, I think there's, I wouldn't go long on a big agenda of accomplishments, but setting the table for next year is what we're up to.
And that's sort of your agenda?
Yeah.
Like permitting, else did you mention?
Energy,
the debt ceiling.
Energy, fiscal policy. You know, obviously we're talking a lot, working a lot on democracy issues. Not at the macro level as much as working to build capacity, do tabletop exercises, working with election officials of all stripes across the country to make sure that our systems have a lot of integrity.
How's the barbecue in D.C.? I mean, is that like...
Well, people say, where do you go to... Where do you go to have Mexican food or barbecue? I say Dallas.
But, I mean, seriously.
I mean, that's more true of Mexican food than barbecue because you can get...
Oh, okay.
You know.
Well, we had, we had a guest on who's from Louisiana. And she was lamenting that there's really no gumbo, good gumbo in the city, or wherever else, remember?
Yeah. I
did. Betsy Fisher Martin, that was fun.
Exactly. And I have to say I'm not agree with her.
Yeah, but, well, for gumbo, right. But what about Tex-Mex, then? That's, I guess, what
I mean, I mean, I haven't scoured the landscape completely, but, you know, just once you... Yeah, Texas Mexican food.
Right. Yeah. It's like anything. Once you've had the best, Although it kind of goes back to the mean.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's
like after a while, Austin Grill is like, Maybe Austin Grill used to be such a big thing. I don't even know if they're open.
I don't either. Yeah. And COVID, of course, changed.
Goodness.
Yeah.
I know. Well, actually, that's a great point because it's what I was going to say. So you were gone and came back last year? Or how long
came
have you
back
been
at the
back?
End of last year, about 6 months.
And how long were you gone for?
11 years.
Wow, really?
Yeah, I left in 2013.
Wow, because I feel like I've seen you.
Well, we certainly have, you know, through our little networks and whatnot, but
Well, so, I mean, aside from the obvious, or just talk about COVID, but D.C.'s restaurant scene had gotten very vibrant.
Yeah.
And again, it's almost impossible to get reservations at these hot places again.
Yeah.
But how has D.C. changed, restaurant or otherwise?
Well, I think the traffic is much worse than I remember it. Of course, during my secretarial days, I had somebody driving me to work, so... I think the infrastructure is not kept up with the growth.
Right.
As simple as that. And I think the whole, this is again back to regional differences, you know, Texas really never shut down to the extent
right.
that this did, and people didn't, you know, didn't stop showing up for work, and you know, it's easier to get to work and get home in other parts of the country than here, so it's just a different work ethic, so I'm trying to factor out the regional differences, but... Anyway, I do think the food scene is better. You know, when I look at, you know, the area near BBC, that Franklin Square, I mean, that used to be the 1% encampment,
yeah.
and it's a beautiful park
yeah.
now. And I look out there and I see kids playing and people walking their dogs. And then all the retail that's down there is kind of amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know what that'll mean when the teams leave, but that's another show.
Right.
That is another show.
You're listening to Lunch with Shelley.
Claude also does work with Bill Bennett.
Yeah, actually, Bill and I have a meeting today.
He's a good man. Tell him hello.
Weird
thing is that he and I both have houses at this tiny little island.
North Carolina.
In North Carolina, Baldhead Island, North Carolina.
Love
so two secretaries of education in this little bitty.
Wow. Well, do you have like a secretary of education club?
You know, I stay in touch with them, you know, kind of here and there. Betsy DeVos organized a amicus brief with all the Republican secretaries.
Really?
On the free college Biden overreach that the Supreme Court ultimately affirmed.
Right. And he's still talking about it.
Well, they're still trying to wire around whatever, but the big giant one was thwarted by the courts, but... And rightly so, in my opinion. But so
that's so interesting, though. So I didn't know there was an amicus from you guys. Were you sort of under the radar, or apparently you are now?
I guess I'm putting it on here. But no, I mean, it was signed by all the former Republican secretaries.
How many are there now?
Well, let's see. There's
that are around,
obviously
right.
Betsy, Lamar,
right.
Alexander, Rod Paige, Bill Bennett. I guess that's probably
that might be it, right? Yeah.
What is Lamar Alexander doing these days?
You know, he's, you know, retired back in Tennessee. You know, his wife Honey died. So
I did not know that.
Yeah,
oh.
So but anyway, he was a good ally and a good egg, as you know too, so
yeah. Nice to meet you. That was a fast lunch.
Well, we got things to do.
We're lingering.
Technology, you got it all going on.
Exactly.
How do you all know each other?
We met through my girlfriend Jean Card. You know Jean.
Uh-huh.
Jean was a writer for Elaine at Labor.
Right, yeah.
Great friend of mine. And was doing podcasts with Claude. And Lunch with Shelley was just going to be lunch, but it's very Seinfeldian, or the idea was always
right.
supposed to be Seinfeldian in that it's kind of about nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just about joyfully and authentically having lunch, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I was going to do a coffee table book, and then I got so intimidated by writing a book. And so then I was like, oh, I'll do a podcast. That's so much easier, which is ridiculous. But
yeah, and that is ridiculous.
Yeah, completely. But it's definitely more entertaining and lively.
More fun for you, probably.
So much more fun. So anyway, I called Claude, and he was so amazing because he's like, I really love this idea. And I was like, what?
Yeah. An early adopter.
Yeah.
And we didn't know what it was going to be. But said, well, let's book some people.
Let's just start.
Set up some mics.
Let's just start. No.
We don't have to have everything figured out. You know?
Life that's is like
the,
that.
That's one of the biggest lies, I think, of like people's perception of success, that everyone in a boardroom has it figured out and know what they want to do.
It's so
no,
true.
They don't.
Yeah,
they
no.
say yes, and then they figure it out as they do it.
Amen, amen.
You just have to be able to endure the ups and downs and the bumps and things like that and stick it out long enough for it to become whatever it's going to be.
Right.
But the biggest lie is that everybody's got it figured out and that's how they get to
Well,
it. Like,
this
no.
is a gross generalization and kind of where we started, which was, you know, that women are more susceptible to that, oh my God, I'm not worthy kind of thing.
Right. Mm-hmm.
No man that I've ever come across is sitting there thinking like, well, what if I fail?
Never.
No, they're
going to
start down the road and... put the lead on the target
right.
and God bless them.
Right.
I mean, anyway.
And most of the time, you know, he's not good enough, but he doesn't care.
Right. It doesn't cross his mind that he's not good enough. Right. But you know, it's funny because
I mean, honestly, Shelley.
Yeah.
Amen, sister.
It's mine that I'm
No, it doesn't. No men that I've ever met.
You're listening to Lunch with Shelley.
Well, let's talk about the state of education and the state of kids.
We were getting along so well.
What do you think?
It's terrible. I mean, post-COVID, we have got to relight the urgency fire for kids who, especially, you know, those who miss so much school, absenteeism is high. I mean, it's been a disaster. And the sense of urgency around it is not what it ought to be. Because we are going to pay the price for this underachieving group of kids for a very long time. And they, above all, are going to pay a big price.
Right.
So, you know, we're starting to turn the tide, but it's slow and it's regional. So we need to triage. And what's happening around the country is people are starting to refocus on the basic skills of reading and math, which was a huge part of No Child Left Behind. Hello.
Right.
And on, you know, testing and accountability and making sure kids are on track. And above all, on research-based reading practices and intervening. And some of the places with the big, you know, early successes are places that you might not expect, like Mississippi. And, you know, they had a lot of work to do for sure, but they really put the recipe for success into effect and are seeing some really good gains, especially for poor and minority kids. So God bless them.
You're reminding me, that's what us, were very into was testing. And people got so pissed off.
Well, here's
off
what
about
I'll
it.
Say about that, Shelley. We got to care enough to find out.
Yeah.
So if you don't test, you don't know.
Right.
And,
remember,
and now the testing must be scary as hell.
It is.
Are they testing now, do you think?
Yeah. Because it's federal law. They have to. And, you know, people still try to, you know, screw around with the results and whatnot. But, you know, we can't fix a problem we don't know we have.
Right.
And you can't build urgency if there's no problem. If there's no problem, we don't need a solution. And there's a lot of people who want us to believe there is no problem, and I think we all know better than that.
Yeah.
If you're trying to hire somebody, if you have a kid in school, if you're trying, you're like going, holy cow, we got to pull up. So,
don't you think that's sort of one of the positives? I mean, I thank God, and I mean it's in the best way, but I am so grateful that my son actually graduated. I mean, everybody had terrific disappointments, every age group. But I'm so grateful that Sam wasn't
learning
8,
to read.
10,
yeah.
12
to
during
learn to read.
This.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, any or 3, 4. I mean,
exactly.
Any of that. He would have gone nuts. I would have gone nuts. But don't you think that it's really great as in a way, you
a
know,
silver lining that people
is
now,
that the parents got
absolutely.
So much more involved because they were so aware of what the kids
no
were
question
learning.
About
right.
It. There's an unbelievable podcast. You haven't listened to it. I don't know if it's okay to plug a podcast on a podcast, but it's called Sold a Story. And
really?
It's all about this phenomenon you're talking about. Parents who are watching their kids not be able to read, trying to use, you know, systems that are no way to learn to read.
Right.
And being frustrated. And so, you know, you're right. It is a silver lining. And I think the net of that is states are focusing more on research-based reading practices like phonics and phonemic awareness and all the stuff that was in No Child Left Behind, and also focused on school choice programs so that they have options out of public schools or not serving them. And that's really sweeping the country. Governors around the country, huge expansion in school choice programs.
Because what another wake-up call was, not just what my child's not learning, but what is actually being taught to them in class.
Well,
like, wait a minute, what in the world is this?
A lot of that.
You know, well, I'm trying to teach them about life and love and gender fluidity and this and that. It's like, but you're a math teacher.
Yeah, yeah.
Why aren't you teaching them math?
Yeah, yeah.
That's not your job to do that.
That was a wake-up call, too, for sure. So it's that experience has really kicked off a new era in public policy making. I had a conversation the other day with Sarah Huckabee Sanders, now the governor of Arkansas, who worked for me.
What an incredible world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, who at the Department of Ed.
And she might be the vice president. I mean, who knows?
No,
right.
She has embraced, as we started, you know, education is what governors do. And she has pushed a huge set of reforms that they got enacted, including raising teacher pay dramatically from, you know, $36,000 to $50,000 starting salary, and on school
wow.
choice, reading, accountability. I think they call it the LEARN program. Anyway, she'd
no,
be
that's
a,
fantastic.
She'd be a great guest.
Yeah. Well, did you know that?
No, about what she was. No, I had no
yeah.
clue. She was
Do you know who she is? Though?
No, of course. Yeah,
she's
yeah,
so
yeah.
impressive.
Yeah, I like. I'm a big fan of her.
And she's oh. really young, isn't she?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, everybody's really.
I
young
know. Well, it's all my favorite thing. I say this rather often. I think on this
not
podcast
that young,
too.
Honestly, she's probably mid-40s.
She's less than. Yeah, but that's pretty young.
Well,
so, yeah. As my father always says, it's all relative.
It's all yeah. But anyway, yeah, she's
but right. what is the Bipartisan Policy Center doing on education?
Not enough right now, but it's one of the things that I really want to build up.
Yeah, because you've only been there
yeah,
for a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah. But we have done a lot of things that are around the education issues of, you know, early childhood. We're very strong in that arena of child welfare, youth mental health. And a little bit around higher ed, but have not really engaged much in K-12 or higher ed or workforce policy. And as I said earlier, those are places where we really can bring bipartisan spirit. In fact, in my office, if you come, you'll see the No Child Left Behind vote count. I have this whole montage.
That's so cool.
Passed the Senate 87 to 10.
Wow.
87 to 10. Ted Kennedy, George Bush, George Miller, John Boehner. And, you know, that's not an accident. That's hard to do. And, you know, it's a law that affected tens of millions of school children and lives on to this day.
It was a huge success.
There you have it. You
Although, at the time, you know, like everything, it was vilified. Or,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
2 years later, it was vilified. Yeah. And then it was appreciated again.
Right,
or,
right exactly. It's now back in vogue. And I'm like going, oh, my God. You know?
Right.
So, yeah.
But, you know, I guess back to democracy and education, Claude and I do talk about this a lot. It is very worrisome about the curriculums. And we've also been talking about it post-October 7th because mm-hmm. I
right.
think a lot of pro-Palestinian curriculum or anti-Semitic curriculum has been
I think that's
in
more true
system.
In higher ed than
higher ed.
Than
sure. Well, that's sure. sort of what I was talking about. What are your thoughts on higher ed, if any, except which I assume you would agree it's too expensive.
Oh, absolutely.
Holy smokes.
I mean, it's they've jumped the shark.
Oh, my God.
You know, and
it's impossible.
It is. I mean, for, you know, regular old people. Now, the good news of that is, you know, you can get a great education if you start at a community college
right.
and go to a public university and whatnot. So to the extent that it's made people more price sensitive and...
Yes, people are price sensitive.
Yeah, that's good. But,
yeah.
You know, we damn sure don't need to say, let's have free college wherever you want, whatever you want, if, you know, you study any
or
film.
Or get a loan and don't pay it back.
Yeah,
it's
all of
cool.
That. Yeah,
right.
No, you know, that's all right. the wrong incentives in the system
yeah.
for everybody, for the student, for the institution, and so on. So, anyway, lots to say about that. So might be another show, but
no. But like, yeah. what else would you say?
Well, I think you know, higher ed, and this is not original with me. I mean, obviously, it's the ivory tower, and I
right.
think you know we're seeing as a business model that it's not. You know, I get the Chronicle of Higher Ed every day, and I read it. You know, institutions are closing, losing enrollment, prices are up. You know, on and on and on. It's a kind of a death spiral. So they've got to really meet the moment, and the people who do will stay in business and provide a value proposition that's worth having, and others won't. States, like the one I just came from, we retooled our high-end funding system so that it would be connected to the workforce. So we're going to pay
oh, that's good.
Institutions nice. For getting people ready for a J-O-B.
Yeah.
You're listening to Lunch with Shelley.
Forgive me if I've asked you this, but the White House mess, did you go a lot? And what would you
all
eat?
The time.
What
I mean,
would you eat?
Navy bean soup.
No. You know,
that's
honestly,
a big thing
I normally got takeout from the mess and ate it at my desk because we were working. But,
right.
you know, I, of course, on occasion,
every once
I would,
in a while,
I would
right.
entertain people down there, and it was, you know, fun to do. But, yeah, they have a good sandwich. They have a good hamburger. They have good specials of the day. You kind of can't go wrong, and they're so nice. And you know, here's the thing, Shelley, and I think it's kind of a good thing. I didn't really know how cool what we were doing was
right.
at the time, so it kind of
which made you very
it kind of
cool.
didn't go to my head.
Yeah,
I'll
right.
never forget. You'll love this story. When I first moved up here, and I, you know, went to something, and they were like, okay, well, what's your job? Well, I'm the domestic policy advisor. And that person said, where do you park? Where do you park? I'm like, I park on West Exec.
Right.
Because little did I know.
That was amazing. That
West Exec is better than the Ellipse.
Exactly.
And the Ellipse is better than the whatever, you know. But if you're not from Washington, you're like, what do you park? What the hell are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Okay, well, back to food.
Yeah.
If you were going to eat lunch anywhere in the world, where would it be and what would you be having?
Oh, my God.
You could take a minute.
I'd probably, what leapt to mind is, you know, Paris.
Nice.
Just because I'd get a trip out of the deal. And I would have, you know, a steak frite.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
Do you know where? Somewhere overlooking the Eiffel Tower or something?
Yeah, I can't name a particular place, but yeah, something.
So French food.
So French, you know, watching the boats, you know, go down the river and something like that.
Spring, summer, fall.
Yeah, yeah. April in Paris.
Yeah. What about what about if you were in Texas, where would you eat?
Oh my God, easy. I love Mi Cocina, Mexican restaurant. There's one that was very near where I lived. And
In Houston?
No, in Dallas.
Okay.
And what you have to get always is a Mambo taxi. And so every time I go to Texas, I get my standard barbacoa tacos and a Mambo taxi. And a Mambo taxi, for those not in
please.
The know, is a frozen margarita with a sangria swirl on the top.
Oh, nice.
It's very pretty and very delicious.
Margaret, thank you so much for being
on. My
pleasure. You are the sunniest, most fun person, and you're so smart. And really, it was great to have you on, and you're just, I'm so happy to look across the booth and see your beautiful face. So thank you very much. I knew this was going to be super fun, and it was. Claude had a great time, too.
Absolutely.
I feel like Texas has invited us down.
Absolutely. And we have to go.
We have to go.
Mambo taxis on me.
I want that margarita.
Right. We'll pack the stuff up and we'll go.
Mambo. Yeah. So thank you all for listening. We hope you enjoyed this podcast half as much as we enjoyed taping it. And check out other podcasts, too, at www.lunchwithshelley.com. Thanks again for listening. And in the meantime, peace, love, and lunch.